This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Welcome to What's News Dunedin, brought to you by Hazur Kebab, the radio show that spawned from the 22,000 plus strong local Otipo to Dunedin What's News Dunedin Facebook group. The group that's been putting the social back in the social media since 2020, with respectful adult debate and a sense of humour. I'm your host, Richard Knights. On today's show, we'll be talking to our wonderful guest, David Bainbridge-Zafar, opportunity candidate for Dunedin, who will be telling us more about themselves and what they do, as well as helping us look back at the posts that generate the most interactions over the past 7 days on the What's News Dunedin Facebook group. Those posts this week are AI and its use in generating images and videos. Is it a tool or an environmentally unfriendly toy? Fuel crisis resulting in a number of planes withdrawing from warbirds over Wanaka. And Councillor Ong and the ODT's 3-hour interview that revealed nothing, literally nothing. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Richard. I'm just wondering how often Councillor Ong has been one of your top three topics of the week.
In the last 7 weeks, probably every single week. I'm genuinely looking forward to a time that's not the case. Now, before we get into talking about the news, we do have our pun of the week. So on a Monday, we do a Punday Monday post. Basically, we get our people to bring their best dad jokes, their best puns, bring it onto the group, and then basically bring the best one onto the show on Friday. So when I say the best one, that's simply decided by how many laugh reacts it gets, right? So it's just no, there's no science here. Whoever gets the most laugh reacts, that pun, whether I believe it to be good or bad, comes on the show. Max Reed is a top winner, friend of the show, top winner most of the time on the pun of the week, and this one is actually one of his. So we will see if you find it funny. And there's no obligation to feel it funny. I think sometimes we should just not laugh and make him up his game a little bit.
Yeah, I think the appropriate response to a pun is tumbleweeds, right?
We're supposed to be, but I tend to give a little bit of a giggle. So anyway, this is our pun of the week. I hear there's been an increase in crime at some of Dunedin's multi-story car parks. That's unacceptable on so many levels.
Yeah, that is quite good, actually.
I thought it was quite good as well. So Max, that's a winner. I'm sure you're listening. You do, mate. And again, before we get into the actual news and the important stuff, talking about your good self, we are also going to do our three pop questions. Okay, mm-hmm. So the three pop questions are my questions that basically I believe, no one else does, I believe, get under the skin of my listener, my interviewee, and tell my listeners everything they need to know about the person I'm talking to, right? There's no science here. It's just stuff that I've made up, right? But first question, very important. Cream teas. So mm-hmm. when you have a scone, you have jam, you have cream. What goes on first, the jam or the cream?
Yeah, it's got to be the jam.
It's a good answer. I'm always worried. This is my question that worries me in the show, because sometimes like people say cream, and then like we're on the back foot then, because like straight away like you've got that wrong.
That's the Devon way of doing things, right? And everywhere else in the country does jam first.
Yeah. And a weird thing, David, the other day, I mean, obviously you sound like you're from the UK like I am. The other day I had someone in from Cornwall mm-hmm. who do it the right way that said jam first.
Yeah, jam first is the right way.
Yeah, no, so she said cream first. Sorry, she was from Cornwall and said cream first.
Oh,
and I was like, hang on a second. How are you ever going to go back to Cornwall, the place where you were born? How are you ever going to be able to walk across the county borders when you've just got it wrong?
Crazy. And can I just congratulate you on saying scone and not scone like a lunatic?
Yeah, well, see, I've had that conversation a few times on the show as well. Like, you know, I obviously, coming from Essex, speak the Queen's English. Mm-hmm. You know, very proper, very well spoken, you know.
Okay.
Just not David. it's a scone. It's as simple as that. You know, we're not from Sunderland. You know, it's like, you know, let's keep things classy here. Is all I'm going to say. That's the only question you get wrong on my show, and you got it right. So
okay,
we are one for one. Everything else is all good, right? Second question: who is your favorite Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle?
Ooh, it's a tough one. I'm not a party dude, so not Michelangelo.
No,
he just needed to calm down a little bit. Maybe Donatello, the purple guy.
Yep.
He was pretty cool. He had a big wooden staff, right? Quite
like
that one.
Don't start questioning me on stuff like that, because my wife is an expert.
Okay.
And if I get that wrong, if I go, oh, yeah, that was the one with the staff, and it was the nunchucks, right? I suddenly get a text in my pocket. I was like, you got that wrong. So I don't like to kind of, like, my turtle trivia is not top notch. We'll just pretend that maybe that's what it was.
Okay.
Just because otherwise, I just don't want to get in trouble.
I think Donatello Purple Guy had a big long wooden staff.
Okay.
Pretty sure.
If my wife's listening, we'll find out in a couple of minutes.
Okay, yeah, we'll get a text.
You know, we'll get a text and we'll be able to clarify that. Now, third and final question, and this one's a thinker, right? Mm-hmm. So, would you rather be granted one huge wish or 100 small wishes?
Ooh, that is a good one.
Now, what I don't know when I've picked this off the internet, because that's all I do, is haven't quite figured out what the criteria is for a big wish or a small wish.
Yeah, yeah.
But the concept is there. Would you rather one, let's say that if you were asking for money, mm-hmm. like the big wish could, well, it could be billions, but if you were asking, if the small wish might be a fiver.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Would you like lots of little things or one massive one?
Oh, that's a good, I feel, I'm like, I'm a big fan of like incremental gains.
Yeah.
You know, big believer that that's how you get better. Lots of little improvements. That's how things get better. So maybe 100 small wishes would be better than one big thing.
I think the same for me. Not because I'm thinking like you, but because of the fact that I think if I went one big wish and I suddenly went, damn, that's not what I wanted.
Mm.
I might be kicking myself. I mean, obviously I'd be like, you know, the richest man in the world at the same time, and so I probably wouldn't be that sad. But I'd still be sitting there kind of going, should I have gone for something else? I've had that one opportunity.
Yeah, know? I think 100 little wishes. It depends how small those little wishes are.
I mean, there needs to be significant, I would guess. I mean, I'm just making this up now because, like, you know, we need to put some criteria around it.
Yeah.
But I think I'd go 100.
Go 100 small ones?
I'd go 100 small ones too. I mean, there's no right or wrong answer here. Again, it's just, you know, where would you land? And I'd have regrets with one big wish.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah, you'd be bound to have regret afterwards. You spend ages thinking about what that big one thing is, and then...
And then you'd be like, oh, I should have gone with the other thing that I ruled out. The last thing I ruled out, I should have taken that one instead.
And 100 small, you can spread the joy more with 100 small things.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. That's a lot of extra kebabs. But, you know, if that's what, you know, a wish, you know, like, I wish I had a kebab. Oh, there you go. It's lunchtime, David. I tend to get, you know, with my stomach.
Tend to get foodie around lunchtime.
I do tend to get foodie, especially when you're sponsored by Hazer Kebab. It's like it's almost a prerequisite.
Just a funny story on your sponsor. When I came here to New Zealand once on holiday, but my family had already emigrated here, and I said to my family, I'm going to take you out for dinner before I fly back home to the UK. My sisters at the time would have been about 8 and 10 years old and said, you can choose where we go for dinner, my treat, take the family out for dinner. And one sister was thinking, where's the most expensive place in Dunedin? And the other sister went, let's just get kebabs.
Yeah.
So I spent $20 on dinner for the whole family.
Kebabs. Job done. Happy days.
They were all happy.
Of course they were. You could never be unhappy with a kebab.
True.
So anyway, let's talk about the news of the week. So the first story of the week is AI. Mm-hmm. And it comes from a story in the ODT that, again, counsel wrong, has put some what I would consider and my son would call AI slop up on his page. So it's like, you know, like it's been, you know, feed it.
Oh, the movie posters.
The movie posters. Like, the movie posters with the mayor in the background, which have all subsequently been taken down as a breach of intellectual property, which I think is a good thing for Facebook to actually do. It's the one sort of thing they take seriously. Mm-hmm. Is if I've had it happen to me before, someone stole my image and used it in a for nefarious means, right?
Not for a World's Handsomest Man competition or something.
No,
like that.
No, because I only come second in that. But okay. What happened when they took it, and then you actually could go to a separate page as a separate way of reporting it on outside of the normal Facebook report post, and they just go, no, sorry, it didn't breach our community standards. But you know full well that it did, right? Actually, intellectual property, copyright, they actually take really seriously. Mm-hmm. And the mayor has subsequently managed to get all the images that Councillor Wrong has shared taken down. Mm-hmm. But it raised the question, because the person who had created it was in the group briefly. They're not in the group anymore, but was kind of going, it's not AI slop. It's like, it's creative. And I'm kind of sitting there kind of going, is it though? Like, because like literally like, art to me, I'm not an artistic person, right? I have creative thought, but I have trouble drawing a bath, let alone like drawing a picture, right? So if you asked me to do something like that, I couldn't do it. I couldn't use Photoshop to do it. I couldn't use a computer to do it. But I can, and I proved it to myself to do it, just to prove it to myself. I can create almost exactly the same sort of thing by feeding two lines of words into ChatGPT.
Mm-hmm.
I had no creative input in that whatsoever. I gave it a picture of a person and said, make that person look like the main protagonist. And I said, and I want this. And out it came, like literally within seconds. No creative skill from me whatsoever. And then I told my son about it. And he's like, but Dad, you also know that when you're doing that, and it's happening a lot, that you're using energy, you're using teraflops of power, you're using water. There's like this huge, there's a huge amount of waste and expense, natural resource that goes into doing that. Like, we should not be celebrating that thing. So, which is why I'm asking the question, is it a tool or is it just a really environmentally unfriendly toy? Because it feels like, for me, I use AI sparingly in the world that I live in, because I also feel that it's just inherently not a great thing.
Yeah, I mean, it was all the rage, 6 months ago, 12 months ago, to make yourself an action figure in AI.
Yeah.
And everyone was doing that and posting their pictures of this is me as an action figure and that kind of thing. And it, like you say, it is a very environmentally unfriendly, expensive toy.
Yep.
That is really wasteful. But it does still have great utility.
Yes.
Not for interesting counsellors making posters, but it does have great utility for lots of other things. And it's, I guess, with any big technological leap forward, there'll be people saying, look at all the downsides, look at all the problems, this is bad. And they're not wrong. But the genie's out of the bottle, right?
You can't put it back, can you?
And it's so accessible. It's anybody can do it. Like you say, it took you two little prompts and there's the image, and anybody can do anything with it. It's free to use, easy to access, easy to use. Yeah, I don't, there's downsides to it, no doubt, but what can you do about that? I don't know.
No, and the interesting thing is what I heard, and I don't know if it's right or wrong, so I'm not claiming any kind of knowledge on it, is that my son says is you don't even own the copyright. When you've done it, the copyright sits with the AI engine, right, because you haven't technically done it. So even if you create something, it's like it doesn't actually belong to you.
Yeah.
So that again that's itself, you can't claim creativity if you can't even claim the intellectual property that goes with it.
Yeah, I think I read something not so long ago that people are getting into difficulty when they're trying to use AI to churn out children's books or simple how-to guides and, stick them up on Amazon for a dollar or whatever to try and make a little bit of money. But like you say, you don't own the intellectual property, so it's hard to monetize that.
Yeah, exactly. You're gonna struggle with that a little bit. So, but the one thing, but it does have use, right? I'm a trustee for the Dunedin Midwinter Carnivals, right? And I look after the warehouse that we have where we keep all our lanterns. And I went in there, we were just doing a sort of like a hazard register and literally sort of going and checking what the hazards were. And I pressed a button in AI and it gave me a hazard register that would have taken me hours to put together.
Yeah.
It gave me that in minutes. And for something like that, which is actually, and I was like, oh, that's really kind of helpful. That's a useful use of it, And I was able to write an induction plan and still got to check it, make sure it sort of matches what you need. But I was able to write those kind of things, which would have taken me hours of work that I didn't really have. That actually generated something for me that was beneficial not just for me, for other people as well. So I could see that there are good and strong uses for it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're starting to see things like AI psychosis and stuff like this, which is, people getting so kind of embedded and down the rabbit hole of AI that they're almost kind of believing the world that they're creating for themselves, because you can train AI.
Yep.
You can kind of get it to do the things you want it to do, but of course it just becomes an extension of your own thought process and persona. But then you start believing it almost like it's some kind of deity. It's actually like, whilst it's not a formally documented thing, people are starting to see some of that, especially on the internet.
There's been a legal case, I think, in America where a guy killed his mum because AI had reinforced his psychosis that his mum was spying on him and his mum was out to get him, and he was putting all these things into AI to say, you know, is my mum spying on me? Is she out to get me?
Yeah.
And the AI was doing what it's trained to do, which is just keep you online, keep you engaged.
Yeah.
So it was,
give you back what you expect to hear.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, it's not trained to give you the right answer. It's trained to give you an answer that you're looking for.
Yeah.
So it kind of reinforced his own psychotic belief that his mum was dangerous, so he went and murdered his mum. And, you know, he's in prison now, but there's, I think Congress in America are looking at, can we prosecute the AI company that was involved there?
Not if it's Elon. He's put in the strings already, but it's like, they'll only do it if it's OpenAI, I would have thought.
Yeah, but I mean, it's frightening, and you've seen a few cases around the world where typically teenagers have ended up committing suicide because AI has kind of encouraged them to do that.
It is mad.
You know, when you put in things like, oh, you know, I don't have any friends, I'm really sad, you know, why does everyone hate me? And if AI just reinforces that belief of, yeah, everyone does hate you, you know, it is your fault, then, you know, it has been really bad and has those devastating consequences. That's the worst of it.
Exactly. Well, you say that. I think there's one other thing that's worse in AI. It can't count.
It can't count?
No, it can't count. In my experience with AI, it can't count.
What do you mean?
I've sometimes given it a big chunk of text and said, can you reduce this to 100 words?
All right.
And it gives me 130.
Okay.
And then I say, that's not 100 words. That's 130. I want 100. And it come back and go, oh, sorry. Yeah, I got that wrong. My bad. It says it. My mistake. I'll do better next time. 115 words. And I'm like going, like, can you count? And the answer is no. Like, anyway, and whilst that's a flippant comment from me, it also makes me think, if it can't do something as basic as count the number of words and ensure that it meets the criteria that I've set for it, I can't really trust much of the information that it gives back to me. And I say that as someone kind of having at least having a critical thinking process around it.
Yeah.
But if you literally can't count, should I believe you?
It is worrying. And I put in something the other day into either ChatGPT or Gemini or something. I put in something about the election coming up in November. And the answer I got back from ChatGPT was, this is definitely wrong because it's 2024 now. And the election hasn't been set yet and won't be set until at least 2026. And I was like, well, so I replied to the AI prompt saying, why do you think it's 2024? Today's date is, you know, it's April 2026.
Yeah.
And it came back and said, oh, yep, sorry, today's date is this. The date of the election has been set for November 2026. And you think, well, why is it?
That's a worry. Exactly. You haven't trained it to do that.
Yeah, and if it's making such random, really basic errors, like not being able to count 100 words or not knowing what date it is, and for some reason thinking it's 2024, like what other fundamental things is it getting wrong?
Yeah, I guess that's the worry for me. We could probably talk about this for an hour, but I don't think I want to, because I've got another topic of the week, which is the fuel crisis resulting in a number of planes withdrawing from Warbirds over Wanaka. Now, I remember a few months ago, I had someone on the show, and I can't remember who it was, and we were discussing the fact that there was going to be an F-22 or F-16, you know, bird of war, real war, 2026 war was going to be there. It was kind of going, oh, well, this is wonderful, and I thought it was quite the opposite. I thought it was quite inappropriate for a current war machine that was killing people today, whilst it wasn't carrying bombs or anything to warbirds. And so these planes have all pulled out now with the fuel crisis. They don't want to spend the money on flying them, which I think is a reasonable call, to be fair. But also, like for me, it also solves a problem that I had with it in the first place, where those planes probably shouldn't, in my mind, shouldn't be flying anyway, because to me, Warbirds of a Wanaka is about the historic stuff, the bit of, you know, the Messerschmitt plane, the Spitfire, the Harrier jump jet, the things that are no longer in service, as an opportunity to see those things as a kind of historic, you know, hat tip to the past.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I guess it comes down to what is the point of Warbirds over Wanaka. It's kind of similar to the debate about fireworks, right? Of like, is this the right thing to be doing? You know, obviously warbirds over Wanaka, all those planes flying, whether they're new planes or old planes, they're using a lot of fuel. They're not taking passengers from A to B. It's not really a purpose other than, hey, look at that plane, it looks cool.
Yeah.
It's not good for the environment. Why are we still doing this kind of thing? Can't we look at these planes on the ground? Do we really need to fly them around? But at the same time, it is a nod to our history, and it's a good show. And you know, coming from the UK, the Red Arrows do their displays all the time, and you know, people love to see it.
Yeah.
Over in America, they love a flyby at a big event, whether it's the Super Bowl or whatever. They'll have a jet fly over. I used to go to the Rugby Sevens in Dubai every year, and there was always a jet that would fly over, and people would, for the final, someone would parachute in with the match ball and parachute into the stadium and put the match ball down. You know, it's only now that fuel prices have gone up so much that people are going, actually, is this a good use of money?
Yeah. I'm thinking maybe next year, and I've just had this thought literally just as we're talking, I'm just thinking maybe we, instead of warbirds over Wanaka, we do submarines under Lake Hawaii, and we just literally go and just look at like a beautiful lake.
You could do that.
I think people will be lining up in droves, like submarines under Lake Hawaii or Hawaii, whatever. I'm not sure I'm going to say it right, but everyone just sit on the beach, sit around and just watch look at the lake.
Look at, I mean, it'd be quite good to go and snorkel and have a little look at the submarine under the water.
There probably won't be any submarines there, Dave. We could just charge like a dollar each.
You could do paper planes over Wanaka.
Could do, yeah. Styrofoam planes, whatever. I want to move on to our last subject, which is Councillor Ong. And I am bored of, I don't mean in a derogatory sense to Councillor Ong. I'm just tired of the fact that this person is in the news so often and, in my mind, for all the wrong reasons. But there was a big ODT, you can't call it an expose because it didn't expose anything, but it was a big article that Mary Williamson did in the ODT late last week. She spent 3 hours with him, 3 hours, and confessed that she learnt nothing. She couldn't get him to reveal the last time he saw his parents. He couldn't name a friend.
Yeah.
There was in my mind some deeply concerning absence of social interaction in anything that he was able to bring back. It feels like the poor man is out on his own at the moment.
Yeah.
He's being ripped through the media, which, you know, again, we're talking about it, so I mean, you know, hopefully I don't want to be seen as being a part of the problem. But he's clearly a loner. He doesn't appear to have any social structure around him in Dunedin, hasn't lived here, just turned up in August. Suddenly he's a council member, he's in front of everyone. He seems to struggle to communicate his ideas in a way that other people understand. He clearly understands himself. We can't do anything about it. There's no code of conduct that allows us to kind of go, actually, we need a do-over on that particular councillor because he's elected representative. It's weird because you can sack an MP in Parliament. Mm. You can get rid of a person like that for poor behaviour or inappropriate behaviour in Parliament at our general central government level. But when you get to local government, there is absolutely no one, unless they commit a crime for 2 years, which has a custodial sentence of 2 years or more, you can, or they resign of their own volition, or they're medically unfit and they've got to take themselves to go and have that assessment. You can't force them to go and have it.
Mm.
We can't get rid of a local government representative. It does not make any sense to me whatsoever. But I'm actually genuinely right now, I'm actually more concerned for the well-being and welfare of Councillor Ong.
Yeah. I think you're right. It's a problem around the country that there is no recall ability. The code of conduct that councils have lack any teeth, and bad behaviour at councils around the country, there's really nothing you can do about it. But yeah, here in Dunedin, I watched that interview that the ODT did with Ong after the last council meeting. They interviewed him in the stairwell of the art gallery, and he doesn't seem well. And I think most of Dunedin have moved away from this guy's quite funny to this guy's getting a bit annoying, and are probably now thinking this guy's not well.
Mm.
Something's not right.
Yeah.
And it is a bit of a worry, I think, yeah.
Yeah, because you don't know where that ends.
Mm.
Like that's the sad bit. That's the bit for me is you don't know where that ends. And I don't want to be like, you know, put bad juju out into the world, but the end could be very nasty if left undealt with, you know. It's you know, when you consider the abuse that he's copping on his own page, because people aren't necessarily very nice online. Like I know this is someone that runs a Facebook group. People, I've had death threats. I've had I get abuse all the time for people that think that because I took their comment down because it wasn't very nice that I deserve something that wasn't very nice. You know, it's like, and then that's, and I've seen some of the comments on his page, which fill me like, again, like if I was the person sitting there getting that on a regular basis, that would affect me.
Yeah.
It can't not be affecting him.
Yeah, and he's obviously on Facebook all the time. It's not like he doesn't see these comments because he often responds to them.
Yeah, which doesn't make a lot of sense when he responds. Yeah. But at the same time, that's more fuel for those people that are being nasty right now, which again is that's kind of like, you know, that's the wrong thing. You know, I've gone past the stage where he's become an annoyance to me. Not that it matters whether it was annoyance to me. You know, he's paid for a seat at the table by spending 45 grand to get elected. But once he was elected, I was quite happy to kind of go, fine, bring your ideas, bring this. And he's been told today in the paper, like, bring your ideas and we'll consider them. Whether he does it or not will be the interesting part. Whether he's actually able to put together a clear and concise articulation of what he is thinking he can do to help Dunedin, or whether he ends up just bringing more confusion or backing away from it, and that will be, I think that will be the telltale sign.
I think I spoke to a few people about him. So I have spoken to Councillor Ong a few times, and as someone who's worked in local government for many years, it became immediately apparent that he does not understand how local government works. But that's okay, and that's not unusual for a newly elected member.
No,
you know, there's
in
no
fact, that's quite normal. That's quite normal for a newly elected member.
But I've spoke to a few people about what's he trying to do here. Is he a well-meaning guy who just doesn't understand how things work? Is he an attention seeker who just wants attention? And there's obviously some people who are of the opinion, which I do not subscribe to at all, that he's a spy sent here to deliberately disrupt democracy.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case at all. I probably think he's a well-meaning individual who lacks a bit of social skills, lacks a bit of social awareness, doesn't understand how the system works, is obviously convinced he's got a brilliant idea that will, you know,
save the world.
Save the world and make rates free for everybody. It doesn't appear to hold any water at all. You know, how many times have we heard innovative, first of its kind?
Yeah, debt restructure.
Yeah, but, you know, if something is an innovative, first of a kind thing, it's probably, you know, it's not been done before, probably for a reason.
Yeah.
Probably doesn't work. But we'll see how he goes. I mean, I hope he has got a good idea. I hope it does work. I hope he can make sense of it. It's a long time till the next local election in, you know, 2.5 years.
It is. And I'm of you. I think if it was that good an idea, someone else would have thought of it before.
Yeah.
Because there's not many new ideas in the world.
Yeah, and there's
especially when it
comes
to money.
Yeah, plenty of people with finance expertise that work for the council, that work for other councils.
Yep.
You know, we're not unique here. We don't have an unusual level of debt. Every council has debt.
Mm.
We're not unique in having rates rises. Every council's got rates rises.
Yep.
If there was a way out, someone else would have found it, surely.
You'd like to think so. Anyway, we're going to stop talking about the news. We're going to talk about you. But before we do, I'm going to get a quick word from our wonderful sponsor.
Have you checked out Hazur Kebab yet? It's your go-to for a delicious lunch, a tasty dinner, or anything in between. Order online to save time and pick up some delicious, authentic Turkish cuisine in just minutes. HazurKebabCafe.co.nz. Dine in or take away at 906 George Street.
Best kebabs in Dunedin.
You reckon?
Yeah, and I've eaten probably most of the kebabs in Dunedin. Not that I'm saying the other ones are bad.
Okay.
I'm just saying these ones are good. Top end of George Street, have you been there?
I have. Not recently, but we'll have to check it out.
Yeah, this lunchtime makes me hungry. What can I say? Now, I want to talk about you. That's why you're here. So the rest of the show is all about David. So for anyone that doesn't know you, and most of us probably don't, I have to say that, perhaps give us a 5 minutes Cliff Notes version of you, yourself, and how you've come to be standing as an Opportunity Party candidate in the general election, then in the upcoming November the 7th general election.
Yeah, it's funny, because I worked at Dunedin City Council for a good number of years and work down at Gore District Council now, I've had quite a few people say, oh, so you're running for council. No, I'm not running for council. I'm running in the general election, which is, like you say, a good few months away yet. But yeah, I came to New Zealand in 2017. I became a citizen earlier this week.
I saw that in the paper. I saw you make an announcement of that. Well, congratulations and welcome to Aotearoa.
Yeah.
I became a citizen a few years ago, and because it was COVID, no one took my photo and no one gave me a certificate.
Get a tree?
No.
Oh.
No, none of us did. Like my whole family got. We'll say a whole family, not my daughter, which is still a bad boy of her because she's like 30 and she has to pay for it herself. But my younger kids and me and my wife. And no, we're four trees less than we probably should have.
Oh,
I'm just putting it out into the world. I'm not upset. I'm just disappointed.
Oh, someone will get you a tree. If I get elected, Richard, I'll get you a tree. How about that?
Sounds good. As a promise, everyone, you heard that.
Became a citizen. Actually, the day I arrived in Dunedin when I emigrated here in 2017. My family couldn't come and pick me up from the airport because they were all becoming citizens that day.
Oh, right, wow.
So they were not able to come and pick me up. But yeah, so I came here in 2017. The joke in my family is that I came here first and I came here last. So I came here in 2003 originally and travelled around New Zealand, spent a bit of time in Picton, taking people for trips off the ferries and spent a bit of time down in Dunedin. And when I went back home to the UK... my folks were looking at emigrating. They didn't like the way England was going and were looking at emigrating to Canada or South Africa or Australia or somewhere. And I'd just had 9 months in New Zealand and loved it. So I said to my folks, go to New Zealand, you'd love it. So they did. So the parents emigrated over here with my two younger sisters, and over the years, various other aunties and my older sister and other family members emigrated here as well. So I finally made the move in 2017. Kind of post-Brexit, and worked at Dunedin City Council as a senior manager there for a good number of years. Then went over to Health New Zealand, the DHB, just before it became part of Te Whatu Health New Zealand, and ran all the infrastructure stuff for Otago and Southland, so looking after the new Dunedin Hospital build and all that kind of stuff. So the joys of working under this government and the budget cuts and the let's rethink, do we really need a hospital in Dunedin? That got to me after a few years. So yeah, I saw the warm embrace of local government again, so left Health New Zealand and went back to local government and took the job at Gore District Council, where I work now. And then, yeah, before Christmas this year, I saw a Facebook ad that there was a new leader of TOP, and TOP was now called Opportunity, and they were going to be in Dunedin. So I thought I'll go along and listen. Never voted for TOP before. Never really had much interest. I'd done a few probably at the last election, those online polls you can do where they answer you a bunch of policy questions and it tells you what party you're
aligned with. What party should you vote for?
Yeah. So I think I did that probably at the last couple of elections, and TOP would have come out, near the top, but hadn't voted for them. So I went along to listen to this new leader speak. Her name's Kule Wong. She goes by Q. Which I think is a pretty cool name as a James Bond fan.
I was going to say, yeah, like you just need a deputy that's M.
Yeah.
And away you go.
Yeah. I'm really intrigued when the list rankings come out who's going to be 007 in the rankings.
Yeah.
I've got my fingers crossed for that one.
Absolutely.
Still not cast the next James Bond, It's still open.
I know. I keep sending my CV and it keeps bouncing. I don't know what's going on. All it comes back with just says face for radio. I've got no idea what they're trying to say, David, to be fair. Because obviously, as you said before, world's handsomest man and stuff. Mm. I'm thinking I'll be a shoo-in, especially with an Essex accent.
I mean, yeah.
James Bond needs a bit of Essex, surely.
I mean, if this is the joy of the podcast radio format, you know, if you've not seen Richard in the flesh, you can just imagine how handsome he is.
Absolutely, yeah. Keep imagining.
But yeah, I heard Q's talk and was really impressed. Really, really impressed with how she spoke. One of my favourite answers to a question she gave was, yeah, I don't know. Didn't try and spin it, didn't try and answer a different question that she did know the answer to. She just said, yeah, I don't know, which I thought was really refreshing to hear from a politician.
It's genuinely refreshing to hear from anyone. Mm. I get asked a lot of questions. I'm in real estate. I get asked a lot of questions. If I don't know the answer, I'll say to people, if I don't know the answer, I'll tell you, but I'll go and find out for you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to try and sort of sit here and blag it a little bit. You know, I'm actually going to just kind of say, don't know. Let me write that down, and I'll come back to you.
Yeah.
There's far more integrity within that than there is trying to spin an answer or answer a question that you weren't asked.
Yeah, that's it. And when someone says I don't know, it kind of makes you trust their other answers more, which is you know, it's such a good answer to give if it's genuine. You know, if you genuinely don't know, don't answer I don't know to stuff that you do know the answer
or to everything. Like that just makes you look stupid. Like every answer, what's your name? Don't know. Yeah.
But yeah, she spoke really well and had a chat with her and some of the other party people afterwards about what their plans were for Dunedin. Had a look at all their policies, couldn't find anything I disagreed with. Was really impressed. It seems bizarre to me that their USP is that they're an evidence-based party. You know, surely everyone should be evidence-based.
You'd like to think so, wouldn't you?
It shouldn't really be a unique way of making decisions based on, you know, what works.
Yeah.
But there we are. So, yeah, very impressed by them. And the more I spoke to them, the more impressed I was, really. And they asked me to run, and I did my best to find anyone else to run instead because I had no desire to be a political figure. But the story I tell people is, look, if I looked across the street and saw three guys beating up a little old lady, I don't want to intervene. You know, there's no benefit for me to intervene. But you kind of have to, right?
But you're going to, aren't you?
Yeah.
There's a part of you, the way you're wired, is going to say, yes, I want to get my head kicked in, but I'm still going to go in there and try and get that little old lady out of that place.
So you've got to step in when you see something wrong. And I think that's where I am with this government. I'm not a huge fan. If I thought things were fine in Wellington, there's no way I'd ever be running because don't particularly want to go to Wellington, don't particularly want to be an MP, really. But not impressed and think we can do better, think there must be a better way of doing things, and think I can help, think I can do things better. I've got a decent career behind me of kind of asset management and project management and problem solving and trying to make things better and trying to help people. I coach rugby, and that's, for me, all about helping people get better. You know, I'm not the one scoring the tries and making the tackles. I'm helping other people learn those skills and develop. I chair the Dunedin Fringe Arts Trust, which, again, you know, I don't want to get on the stage and put on a show, but love helping people do that, helping people do their thing, helping people deliver. That's my happy place, helping other people do their thing. And that, for me, is what government should be, right? They should be there to help people.
Yep.
And that's why I'm running, I guess, to help people and try and make things better.
I'm not going to argue with you in the sense of I don't think this government's doing very well either. I'm not saying that the previous government was a million times better or the government before that was better still. I struggle with politics in New Zealand full stop because it seems to be that we lack a calibre of human that makes me want to vote.
Yeah.
And that seems that, and I'm not just saying that about here. Like I look back to the UK, and I look at those people, and I kind of go, like, there's a few people that stand out as being genuine, honest, caring, kind people that I could kind of go, yeah, I'd vote for you. I don't know what party you're for, but actually, I can hear the words you're saying are genuine, and I like what you're saying. I think we struggle in that we seem to have too few politicians in New Zealand to start off with, in the sense that everyone seems to have 57 different hats to wear, especially when they're in government.
Yeah.
You know, like you've got Chris Bishop, who's he's transport and infrastructure, he's head of Silly Walks, he's like, there's just so many things that he's kind of like
he's
in charge
of.
He's
just got some more hats yesterday in the reshuffle. He's become Attorney General as well as everything else.
Yeah. How can you do that? I don't see how you can give any of those positions sensible time and do them well, right? So we kind of it kind of feels like our parliament is about half the size it should be from a human point of view. That's my feel on it, right? But at the same time, I'm looking at those humans. I'm kind of going, I don't like you. I don't like you. I don't like you. I don't like you. There's not many I'm looking at kind of going, I could look at someone like Chloe Swarbrick and go, I get you. I like what you're saying. Yeah. I look at some of the other people and I'm just kind of going, I'm really struggling to connect with you as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
What makes you want to give you the vote?
Yeah.
And that's where but then I struggle with MMP
mm-hmm.
because then you got parties like Opportunity Party,
mm-hmm.
Alliance Party, the smaller parties. They don't stand a chance unless they get an elected member, pretty much, in the way, or the way it feels to me. And correct me if I'm wrong, because again, I'm only 15 years new to this system of doing things, mm-hmm. and I'm still learning. But it doesn't seem to be any, you know, like, unless you can win Dunedin, yeah, but then you've got to go against a National and a Labour candidate or in a Green candidate that have already got far more personal, like, you know, collateral than you.
Mm-hmm.
How does Opportunity get elected? How does Alliance get elected? How do those people that are saying sensible things, as far as I can see, get the ability to have some kind of connection and influence on a government, be it the last one or the next one or the one before that, in a way that actually brings benefit to someone like me?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a fair question. And so Opportunity are, by some way, the biggest party outside of Parliament. The most recent poll earlier this week had us at 4%, and that's where we've been the last two with that poll. We're pretty confident we're going to hit that 5% and get above it, to be honest. So that's our route in. We're not trying to win a seat anywhere. We're going all in on the party vote around the country. And when you look at the last election, for example, where Opportunity, or Top as they were called then, were around about 2.5%, they only ran 13 candidates. This time we're going to run 30-odd.
Right.
So almost as many candidates, I think, as the Greens are going to run. From 2.5 to 5, really, if everyone who voted for us last time votes for us again and gets one mate to vote for us as well, that's our 5%.
Yeah.
We're, like I say, we're very confident we'll hit that 5% and probably clear it by I think some distance. I think we'll be around about 8-9% probably come November time. But I think there's a lot of frustration. I think 2023, when Labour got booted out, the same thing happened all around the world, right? After COVID, people were angry. They blamed the government. They changed the government. So whether it was a left government or a right government, after COVID, the incumbent government got booted out. People wanted change. Here we are 3 years later. Dissatisfaction with the government is still really, really high. The poll last week, I think, showed more than 50% of New Zealanders think we're heading in the wrong direction. People want change. Is change going back to Labour and Chris Hipkins again? I would suggest not, and I completely agree with what you said earlier, that when you look at those MPs, who are you impressed by? And actually, we had... a month or so ago, Jackie Blue, a former National MP, was in the news for quitting National and joining Opportunity. And she said when she decided that she had to leave National and she left over pay equity rules, she felt that was completely unfair. She couldn't support it anymore. So she quit National. And she said that when she looked around at the other parties, really the only person that she was impressed by was Q as the leader of Opportunity. So that's why she's joined. I'm the same. Q really impressed me. And when I saw the list of candidates, we've got some very, very impressive people. We've got the CEO of WWF, you know, the World Wildlife Fund, not the wrestlers.
I was thinking Stone Cold Steve Austin and...
Vince McMahon. Yeah, no, he's not running with us.
I think that's a vote loser.
Probably. So, you know, the CEO of WWF, we've got some other kind of pretty big hitters, lawyers, accountants, people who have started their own businesses that are frustrated, and quite a lot of them will be taking a pay cut to become an MP. Quite a lot of them will be, you know, putting their head above the parapet and getting quite a bit of flack. You talked earlier about, you know, your role as the kind of admin of What's News Dunedin. You get a bit of abuse. You know, as someone putting their head up to run for council, I'm sure you're getting a bit of abuse.
Yeah, there's that too. Yeah. I clearly like a bit of abuse. It's just like, I think I've only got myself to blame.
Yeah, if that's your thing, that's your thing. That's okay. So yeah, you know, you're becoming a public figure, running for office, you're going to get a bit of abuse. No one's doing this for fun. No one's doing this for money. We're doing this because we want to make New Zealand better. Mm. And we're not seeing the right people that are there. You mentioned Chloe, the Greens, and, you know, I've voted Green in the past. I think the criticism for some people, anyway, of people like Chloe is that she's an activist. You know, she's a bit like Greta Thunberg.
Mm.
And, you know, huge props to Greta Thunberg and everything she's done. She's awesome. I really wouldn't necessarily want her as an MP, you know, and that's where I think, me personally, sure, all in favour of protecting the environment, stopping climate change, all that stuff. Of course, there's no debate to be had. I don't want to see someone chain themselves to a railway line to stop a shipment of coal going through. You know, I get the coal's bad. Let's move on with electrification. Let's just do stuff. And moving away, I think, from the Greens being that kind of protest party, the rebels, the activists, to where's the pragmatism? Where's let's just get stuff done? What's the good stuff that we're actually going to do? And that's where I think I've been really impressed with Opportunity. You know, some of their policies around abundant energy and massive electrification. We've worked quite a lot with Mike Casey at Rewiring Aotearoa, who was named one of the New Zealanders of the Year at the awards last week, you know, to get stuff done. And I think that's one of the things I like about Opportunity, that they're we'll work with either side and we'll just get stuff done. Let's just get on with progressing things. And
I've got a couple of questions. Well, I've got a question for you in a second. But before we do, let's just get another word from our wonderful sponsor.
Have you checked out Hazer Kebab yet? It's your go-to for a delicious lunch, a tasty dinner, or anything in between. Order online to save time and pick up some delicious, authentic Turkish cuisine in just minutes. HazerKebabCafe.co.nz. Dine in or take away at 906 George Street.
You talked about policy and stuff and being science evidence-based, which is, I'm a fan, right? That's kind of my thing, right? So, you know, you're very much about pro-environment, electrification, you know, where the science matches up. But do you think, in a world where we've got sort of like centre-right, centre-left politics, like that kind of polarisation that we've got, do you worry that Opportunity are perhaps too, we'll grab a bit of everyone?
Mm.
We'll grab a bit of what works for Greens, we'll grab a bit of what works for Labour, we'll grab a bit of what works for National, and we'll kind of just sort of sit here comfortably being the sensible party rather than having anything else? Does that, am I making sense?
And it's funny, a few people have kind of said that, and I see that as a good thing, that we've taken the best of various parties to progress and make things better. You know, one of the issues you kind of mentioned under MMP is that you've got this centre-left, centre-right party, National and Labour, which, you know, 70% roughly of the country support, either Labour or National. But they go into coalition and they get dragged to the fringes by these parties that 5 to 10% of the country support. And that's not good for anyone at all. And that's the kind of thing we want to try and change, and that hopefully over the next 20 years we move from Labour Opportunity coalitions to National Opportunity coalitions, and we kind of keep things where most people are and keep things progressing. And it's interesting because I've heard from both sides. You know, we've got Ian Lees-Galloway, the former Labour MP, as our general manager. We've got Jackie Blue, former National MP, mentoring our leader. And I've had diehard National supporters come to me and say, I'm probably going to vote Opportunity this time, because if we lose, and the reality is, whether you're on the left or on the right, whichever side you sit on, half the time you're probably going to lose. It's probably going to be the other side that gets in. But I've had diehard National supporters say, I'm probably going to vote Opportunity this time, because if we lose, I'd rather it was Labour Opportunity than Labour Greens and TPM. And I've had Labour guys come to me and say, I'm probably going to vote Opportunity, because if we lose, I don't want another National Act New Zealand First coalition. I'd rather a National Opportunity coalition.
Right.
And we're that kind of acceptable alternative, I guess. and, you know, there's strategic voters thinking all sorts of things. I think there's a lot of people that just support opportunity because those policies are the best. I had someone say to me the other day, if you took all the branding off, it's the opportunity policies that are the most sensible ones that like you said, we kind of took the best of various parties to just get ahead and just get things moving. But it's the branding that's key. There'll be plenty of people that will vote Labour because they've always voted Labour.
Yep.
You know, Rachel Brooking, I think, is a really good MP. And, you know, she won the Dunedin seat by a lot last time. And I imagine she will probably win the Dunedin seat again this time. And there'll be people that will vote Labour who have no idea who Rachel Brooking is. They'll just put their tick next to whatever name has the Labour logo next to it. And that's fine. But hopefully we can capture enough of that party vote to get into Parliament. And we're quite clear that if we can't do a good coalition deal with either side, then we don't have a problem sitting in the crossbenches in opposition. We're not going to do a bad deal just to get into power. That's not what we're about at all. But hopefully we can get into a coalition and start having a positive effect on either side to make things better for everyone.
So what's on the cards for you between now and election time? What's the plan for you personally and you party wise?
Well, Q is actually in Dunedin next weekend. She's down here Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, so the 10th to the 13th of April, and a whole bunch of activities next weekend as part of the Wild Dunedin Festival of Nature. So she's a runner. I've had 5 knee operations, so I am not much of a runner.
No.
But she's going to do park run on Saturday morning, and she'll do a walk and talk at Orokanui in the afternoon if running's not your scene and a walk is more your
speed. I've had 0 knee operations and I'm still not a runner. I'm putting it out there.
Yeah, running is it's a strange thing.
If you ever see me running,
yeah,
start running too, because something bad is following me. Like genuinely, turn, run, because if I'm running, it's not a good sign. Seriously,
good to know.
Just a heads up.
So yeah, so there'll be a whole bunch of events, and she'll be at Nature Dome at the stadium on the Sunday. She's going to do a pub quiz on the Sunday night. I used to host a weekly pub quiz at Cableways.
Oh, nice.
So we're going to do a pub quiz at Cableways on Sunday night on the 12th. See if you're smarter than a politician. So we'll have Q and a team of politicians up against some regular pub quizzes, and we'll see how they do. And yeah, meetings with the mayor and regional councillors, and we'll, you know, tour the new Dunedin Hospital, and we'll go and have a look at the New Zealand Centre of Marine Research out in Portobello and all that kind of political stuff. So yeah, a whole bunch of campaigning stuff. We're going to do a Facebook Live event.
We are.
Where Q will be interviewed by a top Dunedin celebrity, interviewer, real estate agent and general wonderful human being and handsome man.
Richard Knights.
Yes, that's
I've heard
that's
of
the
him.
Guy.
I've heard of him. Yeah, apparently he's not a bad bloke.
Yeah, very handsome, very handsome. So yeah, we'll do that on the Saturday night, so anyone can jump in and watch and comment and see how we go. But yeah, long way till November, and I've never done this before. So, short answer of what's going on between now and November, I don't know. We'll find out.
Would you still be doing your job at Gore yep. District Council and up until election time? Would you take some time off, or
so I'll take some time off. So as if I was a state employee, I would be required by law to take a month off prior to the election. Local government workers don't count as state employees,
right.
So I don't have to, but I will take a few weeks off beforehand to do, you know, door knocking, all that kind of stuff. And when there are campaign events like next Friday and the following Monday, I'll just take annual leave to go and do a whole bunch of campaigning. So bits and bobs over the next few months, and I'll take leave where I need to. But broadly, this is my hobby for evenings and weekends, and I'm still doing my day job.
It doesn't sound like a fun hobby. I thought you were supposed to enjoy hobbies. I mean, I'm not saying you don't enjoy it, but it's like, you know, that sounds like a lot of work for a hobby.
Yeah, my wife has commented that you are working insanely hard on this.
But it's worth it, right? You do that because actually you care and you want something that you want someone to change.
I mean, I love New Zealand, you know, right? It's why I moved here. It's why I've become a citizen. It's why I chose to make Dunedin my home. I love Dunedin, love New Zealand. And I think as well, and I've spoken to a few people who have emigrated to New Zealand from other places, not always, but for me anyway, one of the reasons why I left the UK was I didn't like the way the country was going. the years of austerity under the Conservative government, the cuts to essential services, you know, seeing libraries close, all that kind of thing, the polarization of society, the rise of hate crimes, you know, all these bad things happening. I remember watching, and I can't remember when it was, but it wasn't that long ago, you know, 10, 15, maybe 20 years ago, there was like a whole week of nightly riots in all the major cities in the UK of just groups of youths trashing the city centre, setting cars on fire, all sorts of stuff. You think, you know, the country was going in the wrong direction and for various reasons I left.
And I'm going to have to stop you there, David, because we're going to run out of time. But it seems like an interesting place to stop. And sure. We'll catch up soon. But just sit there while I round the show out. Thank you very much for coming on. Well, that's a wrap for this week. Thank you for tuning in. I've been Richard Knight, and you've all been wonderful. Remember, if you're looking for robust, respectful adult debate about all things local and further afield, and a welcoming online community that doesn't take itself too seriously, come and find What's News Dunedin on Facebook and join our fun. On next week's show, we talk to Megan Poetiki at the University of Otago's first Tapau Tiriti. I look forward to seeing you next Friday at 12 on ORFM. And if you want to listen to the show again or simply share it with your friends, you can find the podcast at oar.org.nz or even on Spotify, YouTube or your favourite podcast provider.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.